Welcome to Better Words, a podcast for readers who want to know the stories behind the pages.
We're your hosts, Caitlin and Michelle, two book nerds who bring you in-depth conversations about writing and publishing from those on the inside.
Basically, we're just here to talk about books.
We're so glad you're joining us.
Hello, welcome back to Better Words. Today we are sharing the first of our new reread bonus episodes, or sort of like additions to our usual season. So the reread started in 2022. What are years, Caitlin? What are years? I don't know. It was because we were both traveling overseas for my wedding and we wouldn't have time to read a lot of books. So we thought, let's go back, chat to some of the people who we've had on in the past who have done a lot since we spoke to them and catch up with what they've been doing. Because sometimes it had been like years since we'd spoken to them. Anyway, we really loved doing those episodes because we obviously keep up with what our former guests are doing. We support them. We love reading their books. And so it was really lovely to share that with you lovely listeners again as well. So basically, when we were planning this new season and how we were going to approach things in 2024, we thought, let's do reread episodes more regularly. And this is the first of those. So you can sort of expect them to pop up in your feed along with new episodes, but you'll see the reread and you'll know that we're sort of revisiting someone. We're maybe not going into depth as much on a book, but we're talking more with the author about what they've been up to. You'll still get plenty of recommendations. It's just a kind of shorter episode, yeah, where we sort of chat about a few things and maybe a book that's coming out soon by a previous guest. So that is my little introduction to what we're doing. Caitlin, can you tell us a little bit about who we're speaking to today, Libby Page?
Yes. So our first reread for 2024 is Libby Page, and she has been on our reread list and we've kept an eye on her and read her books and all these things for years since we first interviewed her. So here are the stats. We interviewed Libby and the episode aired on the 28th of January 2020. And when we spoke to Libby, it must have been ahead of the 24-hour cafe being released. And Michelle, you had read and loved The Lido, yes, of course. Yeah. And so since the beginning of 2020, in Libby world, not just in the world, obviously, we all know what happened in the world, but in Libby world, she published The Island Home in 2021, The Vintage Shop of Second Chances in 2023, and we are almost at the release of The Lifeline in April 2024, which we do talk about a lot in this catch-up because it does follow on from The Lido, her first novel. So it's like a perfect reread topic, isn't
it? Yeah,
it's
coming so full good.
It really is, yeah. Libby also got married in between various lockdowns in 2020 and had her son in mid-2021. So we'd also talk a bit about how becoming a mother has affected her writing and her storytelling. And
mainly because it's such a huge theme of The Lifeline as well.
Yeah, exactly. So it's kind of like The Lifeline, all these things in her life have created these themes in this book. Like, you know, she would never have written The Lifeline when we spoke to her 4 years ago.
Yeah.
It was, you know, she wasn't thinking about how it is for a new mother, you know, all of this stuff. Anyway, I'm not going to talk too much about it because obviously we talked to Libby about it, so we should just transition music and we'll get to that
before
now.
Before we do that though, Caitlin, I just want to check because I didn't actually realize you hadn't actually read The Lido, because I just sort of assumed that you had. So you did read that before our chat with Libby and caught up with that. Just give us a short snippet. Yes. What did you think?
Yeah, so I have read Libby's other books before, but I had never gone back and read The Lido. When we first interviewed her, you were like a big fan and, you know, we do our best, obviously, but unfortunately not every single time do both of us read
all the books. But also, like, but we were
You'll
talking about the 24-hour cafe, so it's not usual for us to go back and read their previous books if it's not like relevant to what we're talking about.
You had already read it. Yeah, that's true. Yeah. But then in planning for this, I was like, oh my God, finally, like an excuse in like the long list of my TBR to finally get to the Lido I'd been meaning to for so long. And it's so wonderful and warm. And I think all of Libby's books have that like amazing community feeling, but especially the Lido, it is such a community story with all the people who go swimming there. And all the different people in the main characters' lives, Kate and Rosemary. So it's such a... Even though a lot of the book does talk about swimming in cold water, it is a very warm book. It's absolutely lovely. And I'm so glad that I was like, oh, yes, finally, like an excuse to get back to it. And I read it ahead of our catch-up with Libby. And I was really kind of in that space, and I am ready for the Lifeline as well after catching up with Libby.
And having read the Lifeline in preparation for our chat with Libby, I can tell you you're going to love it. Without further ado, we will hand over to Libby, and you will see some more rereads popping up in your feed over the next few months, along with our brand new author interviews. Enjoy.
It's so nice to have you back on Better Words. I was just saying, so I looked this up earlier, like on my way home from work earlier today. We interviewed you and the episode aired at the very end of January 2020. I feel like we need an ominous sound effect or something. It's like we had no idea.
We didn't know
what was to come. Yeah. The world, you know, obviously that is, it's now, you know, we're talking to you at the end of February 2024. So that is basically like a full 4 years. That's crazy. 3 years.
Yeah, lots now happens in 4 years. It's great to be back.
It's been,
I don't know.
Yeah, it's been a long time. Oh. I know. Suddenly I'm like,
I'm still processing 2020.
If it's 2020 to 2024, is that 3 years? I don't know. But yes, it's been a long time. I think Michelle, you're right. We're talking about this before. I think it was when the 24-hour cafe was coming out in Australia, probably. It might have already been out in the UK. And yes, so there's been books since then. Reread episodes are so fun to us to – any excuse to ask guests back. We love it.
Oh, thank you for having me back.
You are a favorite.
You're welcome
of ours.
Because you are actually yeah, of course. But you are a perfect like reread guest because you are also returning in a way with your next book. And I think we should just start talking about that.
Tell us about The Lifeline.
Yes, so The Lifeline is a follow-up to my first book, The Lido. So I never really thought that I would write a follow-up to that book. I thought when I finished it that I'd kind of tied it up all neatly and that was the end. Then I guess just life happened. Like you said, it's been a while, a lot has happened in the world, but also in my personal life. I moved from London to the Somerset countryside, got married, had a baby, and all these kind of big life events made me realise that actually where Kate's story ended in the Lido, which I thought was the ending, was actually the beginning of a new chapter. Yeah. So that's really where a lot of the inspiration for revisiting her story came from.
Yeah.
I love that. Did people ever ask you when the Lido was coming out or before, you know, in the time since, obviously before you decided to do the Lifeline, but did people ever ask you about what you thought might have happened for Kate after that story had ended?
Yeah, and people asked, you know, would you ever do a follow-up? Would you ever kind of continue on with Kate's story? And I must admit, I always said, oh, well, I never say no, but, you know, so it wasn't something I was planning. It really wasn't on my mind. As I said, I think I really felt like the story was wrapped up and that was the end. But then I guess, yeah, just entering a new chapter of my own life made me realise that, you know, there are these different different phases to life, and she'd finished one phase, but that there was this whole new kind of opened my mind to think, oh, actually, what would happen to her? You know, she found this for people who have read the Lido, you know, without wanting to give too much away to those who haven't, you know, she ends it in, you know, a good place. She's kind of got this community around her. And I guess that's something that I can kind of really relate to, having struggled to kind of find my feet when I moved to London initially, but then building a sense of community. And then actually when I moved to the countryside, it kind of shook me. You know, I really wanted to make that move, and yet it was like starting over again. So I think trying to imagine what it might like be like for her, having found this real network, this new community, and having to start afresh, really. And the book also has lots of new characters as well, so it was a nice opportunity to think up new people, really. So it tells Kate's story, but then the other main character is a woman called Phoebe, who is a mental health nurse who is really struggling to find the time to look after herself. So that's kind of a core theme in the book, is both women, Kate, who has a new baby, Phoebe, whose job is to look after other people. They've both kind of hit this point that I hope a lot of readers and listeners will relate to, where, you know, you're putting other people first, you're maybe not putting that care into yourself, and kind of what that experience is like. So that's a big part of the book.
Yeah, I want to talk about Kate more, but you're right. Phoebe is such an interesting character. And I, like, within the first couple of chapters, obviously, you throw her a massive life curveball. And, you know, immediately I was just like so heartbroken for her, because she is faced with this, like, loving her job, finding a lot of purpose and passion in her job, and also feeling like she can't let those people down, even when it means like a detrimental cost to her own personal life as well. Mm-hmm. And yeah, so I was immediately, you had me there with the conundrum that she faces. And I think you do this so well with character. Like, you grab us, you have an emotional character that, you know, the story could be, I guess, sort of sad in some ways, and in a lot of ways it is, but in your hands, I always know that there's going to be an uplifting and hopeful ending. And so I know going into your books that I can trust that it's going to bring me joy, even if the sort of story along the way is emotional.
Oh, that's great to hear, because that's definitely my intention. You know, I think it's interesting, but not totally surprising to me that my books kind of have been classed as uplit, so uplifting literature. And sometimes I step back and think, you know, there are quite heavy themes, like this book, you know, there's themes, yeah, a lot around mental health, you know, and lots of other quite heavy themes. But as you say, it's that I hope, you know, the idea is to always view these things with a hopeful lens, and that actually I don't want to shy away from those issues, because certainly for me, when I'm reading, you know, if I read something where a character's gone through a difficult, you know, circumstance that I've been through, it really helps me to feel a sense of connection, to feel like, oh, this is okay, I'm not on my own in this. But yeah, they're always kind of with that hopeful view to it. And I think, you know, with Phoebe's story, that I was really interested reading a lot more about, you know, burnout. I feel like it's something that so many people are experiencing at the moment. And then to add on to that, the pressures of someone in the healthcare profession. And I guess, you know, particularly having gone through the pandemic and being really aware of how much kind of pressure people, you know, working in healthcare are under, I think that was really interesting to me, to think about how you not only juggle the pressures of just a regular job, but then a job where, you know, people's, you know, lives and well-being are at stake. It's, yeah, it must be a lot. But yeah, as you say, I hopefully do it in a way where there's kind of lightness and fun and hope to it as well.
Yeah, you do, for sure.
Definitely. Yeah. It's interesting that you say that about, like, post-pandemic exploring burnout and someone who works in the healthcare industry, like, especially in the UK, as well as different here in Australia. But it's just like a whole other thing, isn't it? That with, there are so many things that if they hadn't happened, like, you never would have ended up writing The Lifeline. Mm-hmm. Like, it's absolutely, you know, it's one thing, maybe I'm sure many writers can say, oh, they've, you know, different ideas or types of stories or a certain type of character have maybe been in their head for a long time. And The Lifeline really seems like the kind of one that, if we told, you know, Libby 4 or 5 years ago what this book would be about, you'd be like, what? Why? Like, that's,
yeah.
And, how, you know, did I get there?
Like, yeah. And, you know, obviously I've written about lots of things that are experiences that haven't happened to me. That's part of the joy of being an author, that you can, you know, use your imagination. But yeah, I mean, real life events do inspire my writing. I think writing's something I've always done to sort of process and make sense of the world. So yeah, you know, a big part of the book is around Kate's experience as a new mum. And that's something that I don't think I would have written about if that hadn't, you know, if I hadn't gone through a similar experience. So yeah, it's very much a book that's been a, you know, as a result of lots of things that have kind of happened in my own life and the world at large as well.
Yeah, I was going to ask too, obviously we've both followed you for a long time on social media and sort of seen, as you say, like the wedding photos and moving out of London and your lovely little son, and following you on Substack as well, where you've opened up about a couple of things, and especially I'll link the beautiful piece you wrote about the things that you learned in your first year of motherhood, which I think was just really I hope reassuring for new mums. And as someone who's like maybe thinking about a family in the future, I was like, oh, okay, this is good. This is comforting. But I guess the thing is about, obviously, as you say, Kate's journey in this book feels like it might be quite personal to you. How did you feel sort of exploring it in novel form? And like, do you think that this probably is one of the most personal books you've written, or one of the most personal stories in a book that you've written?
I think both this and the Lido were very personal to me. You know, my first book, the Lido, it was exploring a lot around my experiences of, yeah, moving to London, struggling to fit in, feeling lonely and thinking that I was wrong for feeling lonely in my 20s, struggling with panic attacks, which I write about in that book. And actually the process of writing that really helped me feel like I was taking control of that situation. And it's, yeah, I think by kind of fictionalizing, taking events from my own life and putting them into fiction, it did feel like I was, yeah, taking control. And I think with this one, there was an element of that, but also, I guess, a sense of wanting to, I guess, sort of like give back in some way, that the sort of the help and support that I got when I was really struggling with new motherhood, both from, you know, I had some really brilliant counselling specifically for new mums, and a lot of the advice that I was given there that really transformed the way I thought about motherhood has made it into the book, because I kind of wanted to pass that on. You know, it was so transformational for me that I really wanted to share that with other people. I was quite open, as you say, about my experiences, and I got so much sort of support and people opening up on social media, and that really, really helped me. I was kind of one of the first of my, you know, close group of friends to have children, so I didn't really have that sort of experience and people to look to and go, oh yeah, okay, you will get through this. So I really got that from social media and my wider community. So I think I really wanted to write something that was, yeah, hopefully doing that for someone else, that maybe someone who is struggling and finding that early bit as difficult as I did might read the book and feel like they're not alone, and that there is, you know, there is hope. You know, that's the ultimate kind of feeling I want to leave readers with all of my books.
Was there ever a time where you considered maybe exploring some of these things through a different character, like not in a follow-up to the Lido, but a whole new story?
Yeah. Yeah. I actually set out to write a book that was very different, or that just was, okay, I thought, okay, new motherhood, that's something that I feel like I've got a lot that I want to say, you know, lot to talk about. And I started coming up with a character to tell that story through. And then it was at that point that I went, actually, I've already got a character who is very like this character that I'm creating, which is Kate. And that was when I kind of put the two together and thought, actually, maybe instead of creating a totally new story and a new character, I could revisit Kate and explore some of these themes, but through her, you know, through a character in a world that I'd already created.
Yeah.
Okay. So you weren't too far into the process before you were like, ah, no, I know what I should do.
It seems really familiar.
It was fairly early on. Yeah, I kind of put the two together and then talked to my publisher about it, and they were, you know, I think quite excited about the idea of following up at that novel. And I guess it felt like time as well. As I said, it wasn't something I'd ever considered, but I feel like enough time has passed. You know, I've written other books between then, since then. And so it felt like just a good point in my life and my career to actually go back and think, okay, what would be happening, for Kate now, and to explore some of those themes, but within her, with her as the main character.
Do you think, though, that I guess that as much as it is getting talked about more, do you think that, I guess, in the mainstream, there's still a bit of a taboo around talking about like postpartum mental health, and maybe also acknowledging some of the stuff like not romanticizing the newborn days and being like, actually, you might find it really hard to like, you might not immediately have this rush of love for your child. And it's funny that I read that on your post, maybe like a week after we saw Daniel Sloss live in Sheffield, and he has a thing because I didn't actually realize the story. The show is a lot about him becoming a father, and he's like, yeah, no, I didn't love my son immediately. And yeah, like he was like, no, didn't love him. I was like, yeah, he's cool, but like, I don't love him. Like, and he's like, I was like messaging another dad.
I just met him.
Yeah, literally. Yeah. He was like messaging another dad friend, being like, whose child was about the same age, being like, do you feel like this? And like, is this a weird thing? Because no one talks about this stuff, and we're all just given these like Hallmark movie images of what motherhood would be. And I guess you're sort of told like, oh, the newborn days of sleep deprivation, but you know, at the time, like, you should treasure every moment because it'll go too quickly. And that scares me, that whole situation.
I mean, I had such a I look back and think I had such a naive view of it, but I think it wasn't naivety. It was the fact that my impression of what it would be like was built up from everything everyone had ever told me, every film, every book I'd read, just people in my life had said to me, yes, the sleep deprivation is really hard, but you'll be so happy, you'll be so in love with your baby, and this newborn bubble and this kind of newborn bliss. And I saw, on social media, but even people in my life that I saw with new babies, because I think some people, and that's something I've had to realize, is that some people do get that. I thought for a long time, oh, is everyone just lying? Because that wasn't my experience. I found that the first bit so hard, and it did take a while for me to connect with my son and build that that bond with him. I initially thought, well, everyone's just lying. I since have come to realize some people do get that, but some people don't. And it's just, I think we don't get that nuance, that variety of experience. And maybe it's because people feel embarrassed, ashamed. I certainly felt all of those things about admitting that it isn't the way that you expected. You feel, certainly I felt, that there was something wrong with me, that I was the reason why I wasn't having all these feelings. And it feels an awful thing to admit that you, when you've been so conditioned, I think especially as a mother, there's so much around, it's going to be the best moment of your life, it's a love unlike any other. And now, 2.5 years on, yes, my bond with my son is unlike any other, and it is a wonderful thing, but we had to build that. I'd never met him. I'd never met him before. And, I have never experienced, falling. Maybe some people do fall in. That's definitely something I talk about in the book, is that different people fall in love in different ways. And that, some people maybe do fall in love in, in an instant, but for other people it takes longer, and that doesn't mean there's anything wrong with you. I definitely wanted to explore those themes, because certainly when I was really in the thick of that, I felt like I didn't see those stories around me, and I think it would have really helped me to hear other people talking a bit more openly and honestly, and to think actually there are a variety of different experiences. There isn't the one kind of Hallmark movie picture of birth, new motherhood, and that kind of connection that you will build.
And something I guess that Kate that we sort of see through Kate is that her sister, who already has children, had like struggled to conceive, and so Kate feels this, I guess, guilt, which I assume is also something that happens if, like Kate in the book gets pregnant quite easily, and she keeps kind of remembering her sister's words when she found out she was pregnant, saying like, oh, well, you're really lucky, and sort of saying to herself, which I think that in a way like we do with a lot of mental health things. Like I remember in jobs, for example, yeah. you know, trying to say, oh, I'm really struggling, and people being like, oh, well, just consider yourself lucky to have that job at all. So many people would love to have it. Or, yeah. you know, well, you chose to do it. So, you know, it doesn't invalidate yeah. it, I guess, but there's a feeling almost like, especially with pregnancy and something that can be so emotionally charged, and where some people really, really struggle, that you can't like say, actually, I'm finding this really tough, because there's so much emotion.
And it's so, you know, it's something I chose, you know, I chose to have a baby. I really want, you know, he was desperately wanted. And so I think then that disconnect between something you have so desperately wanted and, you know, so many other people desperately, you know, want and might struggle to make happen, then to feel like you're struggling with it is a really hard thing to sort of reconcile. And I think, like you say, you're sort of made to feel that way as well, of people sort of reminding you, and that phrase, you know, that I talk about a lot in the book and that was said to me so often, of like, cherish every moment, every second of it. And I just think that's an unrealistic pressure to put on anyone. You know, we can't yeah. cherish every second of our life. It's not possible. You know, it's too much. And I think it's yeah. about, you know, cherishing the small moments. Yes, there might be small moments that you can cherish in every day, but yeah, I felt that really was like this weight on my shoulders of, you know, if I wasn't enjoying every second of it, I was wasting, you know, these precious moments, and I was doing it wrong. And I think often when people say that, they're looking back with rose-tinted glasses. You know, they can't remember, they're sort of forgetting.
Maybe they're in their teenage years and they're like, God, what I wouldn't give for like yeah. a cute little baby to run up to me and want to hug me and not, you yeah. know.
I mean, and, you know, tiny babies, they're cute, but they, you know, they just cry all the time. And, you know, they, my son would be
so needy. They can't do yeah. anything by themselves.
Yeah. And, you know, you're not getting more than, like, for a long time wasn't getting more than an hour's sleep at a time. Like, how can you cherish every second of that when you're yeah. so extremely sleep deprived? Yeah. And I think, you know, just I try now when friends of mine have newborns to say to them, you know, you don't have to love this bit. Like, it doesn't make you a bad mother. You're not going to, you know, look back. I think that really early stage is such a fog. And I think it, for me, it's like, you just have to get through that to yeah. get to the better bits. And that's okay. Yeah. Like, it's okay. Sometimes in life, you know, it is just, we have to just do this bit, and then, you know, a better bit will come. And it's, I think it's hard enough to function on that little sleep without also putting on the pressure on yourself that you have to be like blissfully happy all the time. I think that's not a realistic expectation, really.
Yeah.
No, I think it's so good that people are like talking about this more, and these stories being told in books and movies and, you know, that sort of thing, because it's so crazy to think that, like, why is that the narrative, that it's so, oh, it's amazing, cherish every moment, you'll like miss it when they're grown up. It's like, that bit does kind of suck. Like, they're needy, they sleep all the time, they cry all the time, it's a mess, you don't know what you're doing, you're tired, like, why?
Yeah,
it's like a huge scam that everyone is in the world got together and telling on themselves.
I mean, maybe some people do, and I think that, again, coming back to, it is different for different people, and maybe some people do really enjoy that stage. For me personally, it was sort of from a year onwards, I started to really, like, really enjoy it. You know, when they can communicate with you, the tiny baby, they just cry. That's all they can do. I mean, now having a toddler, and I think toddlers get a really bad rep. Yes, there are tantrums, but, you know, we can chat together, and he's really funny and sweet. And I guess that's sort of what I also wanted. I didn't want readers to read the book and be really, you know, people who haven't had children be really terrified, because there's that balance, yeah. isn't there? I mean, wanting to talk honestly so that people have a kind of more nuanced view and expectation. People who have struggled like I have feel like, yes, they're not alone, but then there's that balance of not wanting to, yeah, really terrify people who maybe are pregnant or who are thinking about having children. But I hope that the book, you know, it is a balance, and the kind of ultimate message is that, yes, if it is something you choose, not that everyone wants to, but if it's something you choose, there is so much better stuff that comes along, that it's okay if you don't find that first bit really blissful.
It's so funny because, like, I think this past year has been me understanding a little bit more of myself, obviously getting, like, closer to 30 and all this sort of stuff. You know, you start thinking about these things, they're conversations that I'm having with friends who are the same age. And it's recognizing, I guess, the nuance of experiences after us being fed for the most part, yeah, things are starting to change now with books like yours, and I think people are more open. But generally, us all growing up, it's just that I'd like idealized image of, you know, the Stepford wife mum who loves exactly what she does and stuff. And so, yeah, I think it's been more nuanced the more I've started thinking about it too, and it's become. It's still scary, the thought of it. It's still a little while away, but it's like a little bit less scary now that I realize that actually, yeah, you can have these phases and you don't have to love every single element of it. And also no one knows what they're doing.
Definitely. And, yeah, exactly. No one knows what they're doing. And like you said, I mean, I'm very much like you in that I was excited about the thought of a child and, you know, doing arts and crafts, and I'm basically like a big child myself, and like the excuse to be able to do those things again is amazing. And my son now loves reading. Like, we sit every single meal, we sit down and read books together at bedtime. Like, we've got books in every house, and like that is just wonderful. But it's about,
I'm like with, like, you know, friends' kids or family friends' kids and everything, I am the first to like grab a toddler's hand and be like, want to go on the swings? Like, let's go.
I think just as a woman, like having the sort of variety of experiences to look at and go, oh, okay, actually that's kind of what I connect more with. And I guess, you know, thinking about, you know, if I think back to the book, you know, Phoebe is someone who isn't sure that she wants children. And I think that's something I wanted to definitely include as well, because although the book is a lot about motherhood, I didn't want to alienate readers who don't think that's for them, which I think, you know, is a completely, you know, valid choice. And so I think to have that balance in there so that hopefully people reading it will get this sense of, okay, this is one path, but, you know, this is a different path, and like both are just as valid, which I think is not always something that we kind of get told so much.
Yeah. Let's chat more about your writing in general. So we've mentioned that you have Substack, which we're going to link to. It's great. Everyone should go read it. One of the pieces that I really enjoyed reading was about how to retain your love of something when it becomes your job. And obviously, like, your debut, The Lido, changed everything for you. And it's become a career for you now as a writer. So how do you deal with the pressure that comes from moving from writing as a hobby and a dream to being your career? And how do you keep that magic alive?
It's definitely challenging. And I think it's something I wasn't really prepared for, that I had been so, you know, my dream for my whole life was to be an author. And I did other jobs to kind of support myself while I was writing on the side. But I always wanted to kind of quit my job and go and be a full-time author. And then when that actually happened, I was so excited and so delighted. But there was kind of this shift then of, you know, I'd worked in an office with friends, you know, I'd had lunch every day with my friends, and to suddenly go to working on my own was a big shift. I, over time, have kind of got used to it, but also, you know, I go to, in my town, there's a co-working space specifically for writers. So I go there a couple of days a week. That really helps, that sense of community. I also now do coaching, writer coaching as well. And that really helps me feel like, you know, it's not just me sat at my desk. I've got that kind of connection with other people. And I think that helps me go back to that initial excitement, you know, helping guide writers through the experience of writing a novel and hoping to get their book published kind of helps me keep that sense of excitement in my own work as well. But it definitely is a change, you know, when it is your livelihood, it puts a whole new set of pressures on that weren't there before. And at times it can feel difficult. But then when I'm actually sat down writing, it does still feel the same as ever. Like, when I really get into the flow with it and I'm really enjoying what I'm working on, I feel very lucky that I do enjoy it as much as ever. It's kind of all the other stuff around it that puts the pressure on. But I guess I just try and keep that connection to, this is what I love, just sitting down, writing a story. That's the thing that I have always loved doing, and trying to hold on to that and kind of block the other stuff out a little bit.
Oh, that's good. And what about your Substack? How long have you been doing your Substack newsletter now?
Gosh, I'm not sure. A kind of couple of years ago, and I, yeah, I mean, there's only so much time. Like, there's more stuff I'd like to do on there, but it's difficult sometimes balancing the just that the writing is a part of my job, but there's also so many other elements now as well. Mm. Like, you know, the kind of the promotion when a book comes out. Yeah, the social media, the newsletter, like all these things to kind of keep connected with my readers, which is really important to me. But it's, yeah, I guess an aspect of the job that I probably hadn't really thought about so much.
Yeah, I know. That is one of the things, isn't it, that people say whenever you know, like at writers' festivals and stuff, sometimes they have the like career panels and things like that, and you hear people talk about all of these other things that come with being an author. It's like, yeah, in this day and age, being an author is not just sending a manuscript to a publisher and like job done. There's a lot more.
I think any job, there are always the parts that you really love and the parts that maybe, you know, you don't love so much. And I think that's just life, isn't it? Nothing is all one thing. There are different aspects to it. And, you know, overall, I still feel so lucky to do this as my job and to, yeah, do something that I really enjoy and feel passionate about and would do anyway. You know, I would be writing stories sort of regardless of whether it's my you know, my career or not. So I do still feel very fortunate.
Well, we're certainly very thankful that it's your job, because we love a new book out from you every year. Like, it's something that we absolutely love. I think it's because all your books always do have that lovely hopeful feeling to them. I always just, like I said at the start, I know they're going into your books, they're just going to make me feel really happy by the end.
Oh, that's so nice, because that's definitely the aim. I feel like, you know, there are so many different books out there for different moments in your life, different people, and that's the wonderful thing. But, you know, I'm very happy to be in my kind of lane, which is writing books that, yes, will deal with real issues, hopefully make people feel kind of seen when they see experience of theirs on the page, but that ultimately will make them feel uplifted, that, you know, will feel like an enjoyable way to spend their time.
One more question. So, Livvy, you've published multiple books now, and I think this is something that we're always curious about, is that especially for a debut author, that first time going through the publishing experience, there's so many elements of it that you don't know how it works and you don't know what's going on and everything. And maybe particularly with your new book being a follow-on from your debut, if you compare the experience of publishing The Lido and publishing The Lifeline, like, what feels different about it? Are there still elements of this process that are new and surprising, or are you like, oh, I'm old hat, I know exactly what's going on now?
I mean, I guess I you know so much more. When The Lido published, I didn't really know anything about the publishing industry. I'd always wanted to write books, but I hadn't really, yeah, I didn't have any experience with the publishing industry, so it was all completely new. I guess I feel now like, yes, I do understand sort of how it works in terms of just the process of going from manuscript to publication. I know the sort of the different people within their teams, what their roles are. I guess things always, you know, always shift depending on the book. It does always, I'd say it does always feel kind of just as daunting with each new book. You know, I've heard people who've written 20 books and say, yep, every time I feel really nervous about how readers are going to react to it, how it's going to do. So I think that aspect of it feels kind of new each time. It still feels, you know, slightly, yeah, nerve-wracking. You're putting out this story that you've spent so long working on, but at least I sort of have more of an understanding of, okay, this is sort of how it works. And I guess one thing that is very different is when The Lido came out, everyone said to me, you know, don't read reviews, don't get, you know, obsessed with reading reviews. And I, you know, heard that advice and completely ignored it. And, you know, on low days, I'd sit there on Amazon going through the 1-star reviews because I thought that would be a great thing for my mental health. I don't do that anymore.
Okay, good. You really, have taken that on board now, and you actually don't do that. Okay.
Yeah, exactly.
Good. Lesson learned from a previous, you know, from being previously published.
Yeah, exactly. And I guess I just try and focus on, and, you know, maybe now that my books are really important to me, my writing is really important to me, but, you know, I do have another life, you know, I'm a mum, I've got a busy family life. So, you know, that balance, I think, is probably a bit better now. I think when The Lighter came out, I was like completely obsessed by how it was doing and all of this. And now I think, you know, I'm really proud of it. I hope readers enjoy it. But also, you know, I kind of do this, but then I also go and, you know, pick my son up from nursery and go to the park and, you know, do other things as well. So it's that balance.
Okay. Yeah, nice, healthy balance.
So The Lifeline isn't out yet anywhere. Libby, can you tell us when it will be out? Do you know the Australian pub date as well?
I think it's the same as the UK, so the 25th of April.
Oh, great.
Yeah, and if anyone hasn't read, you know, the 24-hour cafe, the island home, the vintage shop of second chances, they've got plenty to catch up on between now and when The Lifeline comes out.
Oh, well, thanks so much for having me.
It's been an absolute pleasure. Thank you so much for joining us again, and congrats on the new book.
Thank you for listening to Better Words. For even more recommendations, you can subscribe to our monthly newsletter on Substack at betterwords.substack.com.
We'd also love to continue the conversation on Instagram, where you can find us at betterwordspod.
You can also follow me, Caitlin, at justabookishbabe.
And for more bookish discussions, find me, Michelle, on Substack at theunfinishedbookshelf.substack.com.
Just like with books, podcasts like ours rely on word-of-mouth recommendations.
So if you enjoyed this episode, please share it with a book-loving friend and leave a rating or review. We'd really appreciate it.